This week on Personally Speaking, our guest is Carol Silver, an Emmy Award-winning journalist. Talk about her faith, certainly, and her work in journalism, but more importantly, her reaction to a diagnosis of stage 4 lung cancer. Please stay with us. Hello and welcome to Personally Speaking. I'm your host, Monsignor Jim Lasanti. And former News 12 Long Island anchor Carol Silver joins me now. Carol was the morning anchor for News 12 for over 30 years and announced her retirement in December 2019. She's won numerous awards, including 3 Emmys and more than 30 New York State Associated Press Awards during her career. In 2019, Carol was diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer. Carol credits her healing with her Catholic faith, her family, her friends, the medical treatment she received, and a very positive attitude instilled in her by her parents. Carol recently shared her story of recovery, offering tips on positive thinking at a TED Talk in Farmingdale on Long Island. Carol's married for 30 years to her husband, Bob Riley, and together, the other parents of Jason, Connor, and Shane. Carol's here with us in the studio today to share her story, the importance of her Catholic faith, and to tell us about her personal motto, which has long been, I choose happiness. Joining me now, I'm so pleased to welcome to Personally Speaking, veteran news anchor, Carol Silver. I spent some time recently in the hospital, and when they first told me what was the matter with me, you had your initial reaction. The first time that they said, this is the big C, any anger at all?
Me?
Yeah.
Not a bit.
Not a bit.
Never.
In the whole process?
Never. Never. I was never afraid. I was never angry.
How come? It's just such a natural
response.
You're
going to have to ask God someday.
That's two things that you get, anger and fear, and you're saying they weren't part of the journey.
Not a one. I was never afraid and I was never angry.
Okay, tell me about family reaction. That's you. Carol's built one way. Bob, the kids, how did they take it?
I was scared to death.
Yeah, that's normal.
Well, they say I'm not normal.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing? Yeah. Scared. And then ultimately accepting that you knew what you were talking about.
I think when I was declared cancer free.
Yeah.
50 weeks after my diagnosis.
Wow.
Then they said, oh, she knew what she was talking about.
Yeah. He knew what he was talking about, too. Yeah.
Amen.
Yeah. All right, let's go back to this Bob that we're talking about, this wonderful husband. 30 years worth?
30 years. In fact, we renewed our vows. His surprise to me for our 30th anniversary. It was beautiful with Father Kevin Smith,
our former pastor,
longtime pastor and
friend.
Right. It was
now
great.
In beautiful Blue Point.
Yeah. Yes, he is. Yeah. Exactly.
It's a good little, but you know, because you've been to weddings of mine, that I ask couples to write that letter. There's a billion people you can marry. Why is this the one? What did you know 30 years ago about Bob that made you say, this is the one God meant for me?
He was my friend for such a long time, for years. I met him when I was about 18 years old. Uh-huh. And I was working in a department store with his then fiance.
Oh.
And we became very good friends. And Bob is 5 years older than me. So at 23, he was a man.
Right.
And we used to double date. With my first boyfriend, we used to double date with Bob and his fiance. And I thought he was so cool. He'd say there's a concert at Eisenhower Park and we would go and he would put up the trunk of the car and he had a blanket and he had a cooler and a bottle of champagne, a little
very
glass.
Cool.
Very cool.
So
he was a friend of mine forever. And then he did get married and he got divorced.
Okay.
He got married to somebody else.
Oh,
not his fiance at the point.
Right.
No. And, you know, we would run into each other on occasion.
Mm-hmm.
And he coincidentally started working in television and he was working at NBC and there was a strike at the network. And so he ended up for the couple of months that NBC was on strike, filling in at a new television operation on Long Island, News 12. And we ran into each other again. And we were such good friends. I kept saying to him, you really have to go out with my girlfriends. You're such a good guy. You know? And one day he said, I don't want to go out with your friends anymore.
Right, right, right.
But what I knew is that he was a great friend. He had such a great heart, really good soul. He was willing to go along on the search with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the soul search, the faith search. Right. He was willing to do that with me. And you know what I've said to my kids? I couldn't breathe without him. And that was the clincher for me. I really couldn't breathe. I was smart enough to break up with him at one point because he was saying we should get married now. And I was saying, I'm not ready.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, we have to stop dating because this isn't fair to either one of us.
Right.
And during those months, I was talking to my mother one day and I was like, oh, you know, but it's so painful.
Yeah.
Like, I can't breathe. And then I realized, and I gave him a call. And then we got engaged a couple of months later.
So you finally fell off the fence and said yes.
I did. Yeah, we don't even know what the official engagement date was.
If Bob were here and I said, but why Carol? What did he see or need in you?
He says it all the time. He says there was a light. Oh. When we worked in the department store together, he said sometimes I would walk into the building and there would be like this light about me. And he said, I wanted to know what that was and I wanted to have it.
Wow. Between the light and the MRIs and this is all the light in your life. You know?
A lot.
Now, years ago, she's now in heaven, but a dear friend of mine was the actress Patricia Neal.
Mm.
And she said for the rest of her life, at 39, she had three strokes. That the rest of her life, people who had been through stroke drew strength from her, but they also turned to her for encouragement. Now you've survived this god-awful cancer. There's tons of people out there who are battling cancer. And I know they look to you as some kind of source of knowledge, information, strength. Can you handle that?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Because I can say I don't have all the answers.
Yeah.
I don't. But I know what worked for me. Mm-hmm. See, what worked for me was, why did I handle it so well? The moment they told me I had stage 4 cancer, I was in a room with a new oncologist I had. I didn't think I needed an oncologist. I grew up so healthy. Right. I'd been a runner, a walker, a swimmer, a lifeguard. I'm a vegetarian, for goodness sakes. You know, why
I'm going
me?
Out to have hamburgers today. Because
I hope they're good. I hope they're good. But why would I possibly get cancer? And so here I am and we're meeting an oncologist because I had gone for a test for this cough that was persistent. And it turned out that it was stage 4 cancer, a golf ball sized tumor in the top of my left lung, moved on to 12 more tumors in my brain.
Wow.
And at the moment that I was sitting in a room meeting my oncologist for the first time,
mm-hmm.
it was myself, it was my oncologist's PA, physician's assistant, my husband, and my friend Kathy, because she's a nurse.
Okay.
And now she's my personal nurse. Why not?
All right, good.
You know,
good,
I call her when I need.
Hey, buddy.
That's right. Translate this for me, would you? And the doctor said, Dr. Sitharamu said, you have stage 4 cancer. And that room got like deadly silent
mm-hmm.
until we heard the words, thank you, God, for my healing. And that was me.
Yeah.
I said it. And everybody was shocked. And I was shocked, even though I said it. And I've thought about it. Where did that come from?
Right.
And I know it came from the faith I had and the example of my mother and the example of my father.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Catholic.
Yeah.
So the language that I learned from the beginning was about being Catholic and having faith and turning to God. And, you know, there's this song about God. I'm lifting the veil.
Mm-hmm.
I'm lifting the veil between me and my God. No separation, no distance at all.
Okay.
And I literally will say to God, sit right here, right next to me. Whatever God is, sit next to me, right here. He doesn't know because Bob can sit on the other side and they never fight for a side. And so that is a part of me. I'll just say to God, be on my team. Like I did to Jesus the day that we were walking towards the pond in that vision that I had, when during an MRI or a PET scan or whichever it was. And so I have that faith where I can always say to God, I'll have a problem or I'll even be angry about something. And I'll say, okay, wait a minute, God, we've got to figure this out. Because why am I angry? Really, what's going on? Or why don't I feel good today? Really, what's going on? And I don't mean physically. Like, why am I feeling a little angst?
Okay.
And God and I will have these conversations. So I grew up Catholic. My mother, who raised my brothers and I alone, till I was 10 because my father was in the military. He did 20 years. So he lived in other places, was stationed in other places. She taught my brothers and I. She was a church lady. Mm-hmm. Little hat, the little gloves when I was little, you know. She taught us that God was the greatest power. And we were responsible to find out more about God and to look for God inside mm-hmm. other people.
Okay.
And that meant that my brothers had God inside them too, even if there were moments when I doubted it as a child. And that was a great lesson. And my father had an incredibly positive attitude. He was born in El Paso, Texas, mm-hmm. and his mom died when he was two. And his dad went back to Mexico and sent my father and his four-year-old sister to be raised by the grandparents in Santa Monica.
Okay.
And you could be complaining about that for the rest of your life. But instead, he was always so positive. And he became a naval corpsman with the 1st Marine Division during World War II. And he was in the South Pacific and trying to save so many guys who were so badly injured. But he never told us about those stories. He never exaggerated. He just always told us to think, you know, about our possibilities and doing good for other people. So we had that incredible foundation of love and looking for God from my mother
right.
and from my father, this positivity that don't get stuck in the negative stories. Don't get stuck in it because there's a reason for everything. Latino? I'm sorry?
Both mommy and daddy Latino?
No, my mother was Irish, Carol Francis Fitzsimons. And he was Alfonso Ramon Salazar y Silva. This was like Lucy and Ricky, basically. I mean, he played the classical Spanish guitar and he sang. They would go to dinner in the hotels.
The best of both worlds.
Oh, it was great. They'd go to the big hotels in New York, you know, when that's what couples did and sit it. And inevitably he was up singing, you know, with a band.
And they gave you good genes, kid. They gave you good genes.
Good, healthy genes.
Please stay with us. We'll be back with more of our interview with former News 12 Long Island anchor Carol Silver in just a moment.
It's pretty amazing when you consider that 7 years ago, we didn't have the treatments we have now. We cure 80% of children with cancer. Go back 50 years, we were curing 20 to 30%. This is the miracle story of modern medicine. We understand what makes this cancer tick. And of course, without donors from around the world, this just couldn't happen. There's one thing we're focused on, and that's beating this thing.
St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Finding cures, saving children. Learn more at stjude.org.
One of our guests a long time ago was Monty Hall.
Oh, Monty.
Great, wonderful man, raised $1 billion for charity. But I said to him, do you know that your game show could be the basis for much of our faith? And he said, what do you mean? I said, most people in the Catholic Church try to make a deal with God. Did you in your prayer life become much of a Monty Hall prayer?
Making deals?
Yeah.
I think maybe when I was younger.
Okay, not now.
You know, you break up with a boyfriend. Oh, God, please let that mm-hmm. work out. You know, those deals. But no, not with this. Because, you know, one of the things that happened to me along the way, when I was about 21 or 22 years old, I had just graduated from college, New York Institute of Technology. And at the time, it was 92% men, 8% women.
Okay.
So the 8% of us, the women, we stood out on the campus.
Yeah.
I happened to have 7 of my 8 courses with a fellow named Robbie McGuffey.
Oh, yeah.
And Robbie and I met outside. So we became friendly in school projects together. I ran into Robbie outside a bar in East Meadow one mm-hmm. day, and we were standing outside and we just graduated. It was July, I think. And we said, what are you doing? What are you doing? And I said, I'm doing this. And I pointed up, I had started reading my Bible. Mm-hmm. You know, I guess maybe that I'm growing up now, what does life have for me?
Right,
you know, I wasn't sure. So I had started reading my Bible and he said, so am I. And I went home to meet his mother. We never dated. We were always great friends.
Okay.
I went home and I met his mother, who is Nana Rita to my children. My mother died when my children were 1 and 2. And Nana Rita became their grandmother. And she is still, I think she's going to be mom. I hope you don't mind me saying. I call her mom. She's going to be, I believe, 93 on her next birthday.
Robbie's daughter's wedding last month. Yeah,
yes,
yeah, yeah.
I know she got married. And I had that behind me, prayer meetings and mm-hmm.
So surrender to God's will has always been built in there, even though once in a while you negotiate.
No, I don't surrender, because the word surrender to me would imply, I mean, my dad was, you know, with the Marines, with the Marines for 20 years. So I don't think my brother Kevin, we don't surrender. But God, I'm willing to work with you and do whatever it takes, and I will do my best. And that's not surrender. That's doing the best that I can. And if God says, come home tomorrow, I'll come home. Now, I will remind him, I have children. I have, you know, a couple more weddings and that kind of thing. Yeah. But I'm okay with any of
the children. Good segue. Carol shared with us before the program that she and Bob take their faith very seriously, which we know. But have you got any insight at all into how do you pass on the values that matter to you to the children you love? What works? What doesn't work?
Yeah, you are. You know the expression that you may be the only gospel that anybody ever sees. So live your life well, right? Okay. Some people will never open a Bible. They will never go to church, but they see somebody, you without your collar, but you, and they'll be really touched by who you are.
Yeah.
And that's what my children have learned from, by seeing,
watching it in action.
Yeah. And I think, you know, my younger two, 27 and 28, and then I have a stepson who's 40. And I think that if you asked my younger two, even the big guy, even Jason, that they would say, she's always got a lesson for us. Mm-hmm. Mom's always got it. So sometimes I vocalize the lesson in what is.
Right.
But they can't help but witness what's happening around them. And ironically, my daughter got to that point. She went to St. Anthony's Hospital, St. Dom's, little Dom's, we call it, the elementary school. She ended up in St. Anthony's High School. And her senior year, not surprisingly, she said, her name is Connor, strong warrior, Gaelic for strong warrior. Right. Great idea till she was 15.
Okay.
And she thought she was the strong warrior in the house, but we worked it out. It's fine now. We're all good. And she uses the strength for good. She really does. She teaches in a Title I school, a high need school outside Washington, D.C. She's wonderful. But
so she says St. Anthony's, and she said,
she went
to
St. Anthony's, and she came home one day and she said, by the way, my religion is Connorism. I figured it out. And I said, oh, that's great. And given Catholic elementary school for you and your brother, and her brother, Shane, was in Chaminade, I'd like the money back because that's my beach house, you know. She went to University of Maryland, and she met a lovely Catholic boy who went to Calvert Hall, the Chaminade of Baltimore.
Right, right.
And I said, na 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 poo poo. She had a beautiful Catholic wedding. God was like, don't worry, Carol, I have this one. And Shane, our youngest, who is 27, is dating such a lovely Catholic girl who invited me to a Catholic women's talk at St. Ignatius Parish in Long Beach just a week ago.
Okay.
And I thought, this is amazing. So Father Brian. So my kids have been watching and they've been listening.
And these kids with this beautiful background of the Irish and the Latino, I want to talk about that. Lydia, you know, the wonderful chef.
Yes.
She was our guest 2 weeks ago. And as a migrant from refugee camps in northern Italy, escaping the communists in Yugoslavia, while she believes obviously we should all come in legally, she said, I watch those people at the southern border and it breaks my heart because I know what's going on is you do anything you can or have to save your children. As a bona fide great American that you are, but also some with a heritage very similar to a lot of those folks, what do you feel when you see that?
You know, when my dad died, Newsday did an 8-page article on him. It was the year 2000. And they did a special part 2 every month. They did 12 of them. And Don Myers was the reporter, and he started each part 2 feature article for a month with, every day 1,000 World War II veterans dies in this country. This is the story of one of them. My brothers and I met with Don over the course of 3 months to talk about what it was like. He'd ask us questions. We'd go back to our homes. We'd come together with more pictures or whatever. So it was in-depth. Don is an amazing journalist. And I say that as a journalist, an incredible journalist. And one day he turned around to my brothers. I have a brother 11 months older, and I have a brother 22 months younger. And both executives, highly placed executives.
Right.
And I only say that for this reason. He turned around and said, It was around the time that somebody had hired a day laborer in Suffolk County and took the guy to to an empty factory building in Shirley, a warehouse, and beat the tar out of him and was found and was arrested. But it was that whole story.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the immigrants who was here had, was it a $300 gambling debt in his country? And he knew he'd never be able to find the work to pay it off. And so he came here to get that so he could come home. Two guys were beaten. Oh. And Don Myers asked my brothers about that. My older brother cried so hard. And he said, I thought about that since the day I heard that story, mm-hmm. because that could have been me and Brian. Yeah. We're a generation away from that.
Yeah.
You know, my dad grew up in that house in Santa Monica, and as the depression got worse and worse, more and more relatives moved in. And the last year of his life, for this article, his cousin Pete in California was interviewed. And he's the one who told us dad never did, because he didn't tell negative stories. Why remember them? Why choose to remember and repeat the negative? And apparently the last year of dad's life, he lived under the back porch. It was Santa Monica. It wasn't Hicksville where we were, on a blanket with a light bulb hanging from a wire. And that was the year before he decided to join the military. Lie about his age and go a year early, which worked out for everybody. You know, listen, they were taking warm bodies then anyway, so it was okay. My brothers and I looked at each other and I said, that was the first Harry Potter. We didn't know. But, you know, the compassion, who in this country would try to illegally cross the border by climbing mountains or walking across streams because somebody was going to do something bad to their family?
Mm-hmm.
Who would do that and then try and get work and run every time you saw a government car, a police car? Most people here wouldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
We know one woman who was a nanny here, and she was sent here because one day the Sandinista came to the door and took her brother out and shot him in front of the house. Then her father, and her mother turned around to her and said, you are leaving. And her mother, and she didn't want to leave. She was so afraid for her family.
Mm-hmm.
Her mother paid for her to escape in the false bottom of a bus. And she came here and she was a nanny for somebody that we knew.
Cal, why though? Why, since we all are immigrants here, nobody was born in America, we all come from someplace else. Why do we forget that when we look at the Latinos coming across the border and them, and we forget that them is us?
Because people worry they're going to take what I have.
Okay.
People forget their own heritage.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're a Native American.
As an Italian, man, we went through the same thing.
Yep.
But now we forget.
Unless you're a Native American, you had somebody who came here, even be it legally. You had somebody who came here under great duress or situation, be it from Ireland, be it from Italy, wherever it was, be it from, you know, Asia, wherever it was.
Yeah.
And sometimes we forget that. And it's good to remember that.
It's good to be reminded. You mentioned your work in journalism. And so my loaded question is, we certainly in the priesthood over the past 20 to 30 years have a lot of rebuilding to do.
Mm-hmm.
Even though 4% did bad things, mm-hmm. 96%
gives everybody a bad rap.
We're all tarred.
Yep.
I know that you're semi out of that work now, but not really. As a journalist, you got to know that all the surveys indicate, maybe it's the success of Mr. Trump with the fake news accusation, but you guys aren't being believed like you once were.
Exactly.
What do you do to correct that?
One of the things that I do is I tell people, no matter what you watch, turn off the news.
Okay.
Get your headlines, read something in a newspaper, listen to different things. There are definitely people lying. People know that they will make money and more money by lying. There was even a recent study that backed up that people, you know, people complain there's so much negative news.
Right.
But people watch more negative news.
Yeah.
You know, others have tried to do positive channels and that's not as watched. And because news has become a business,
mm-hmm.
because it was so profitable without the investment of making a movie, for instance,
right.
news became a profitable thing to do. And some people are making money off of telling what's not the truth. So what can you do?
Mm-hmm.
You can watch less of it and make sure that you watch, read, listen to, a little bit of what everybody is saying,
mm-hmm.
and then go back to the source. There was an editor, a chief editor at Newsday, who left to teach at Stony Brook University. And he actually put together a program that's used around the world now to teach people how to go back to the original source and mm-hmm. find out where the root of the truth is.
Yeah.
And that is invaluable. Howard Schneider, I believe, was his name.
Sure.
Sorry if I got the name wrong.
Yeah, I think you got it right.
But it's brilliant. We're all so busy and mm-hmm. our life is so fast paced and it's so easy to pick up your phone and just check the headlines. We need to stop and breathe. And if it's something important to us, go back to an original source and read what you can read, but also watch other things. It's mm-hmm. one of the things that I say, watch things that are constructive,
that are
uplifting, and things that make you laugh, because that makes you feel so much better. I mean, mm-hmm. that's scientifically proven, and we need to feel better. So I'm a big supporter of, you know, Netflix or Apple TV or whatever it
is. Feed yourself from any sources.
Make yourself laugh.
I want to thank Carol Silva for being with us. She's a noted, respected, and much-loved journalist, but she's also got an incredible story to tell about hope, about not surrendering to anything, but being positive, upbeat, embracing life, and also challenging herself to be even better than she already is, which is amazing anyway. So I want to thank Carol for being with us, and I hope you will. What do they get the TED Talk? How do they find out about the TED Talk?
You know what? The TED Talk is on TEDx Farmingdale.
Okay.
And it's Carol Silva, TEDx. Good. Even Carol Silva, TEDx. I have to add one more thing. I also tell you, partner with God. I'm sit right here. Come on, buddy. We have something
Bob's
to work
over
at.
Here, God's over there.
What more do I need?
You don't need much, really. You're blessed. Thank you, Carol.
Thank you so much, Monsignor.
As we end today's program, I want to thank you all for being with us. If you'd like to be in touch, you can reach me at personallyspeakingpodcast@gmail.com. You can see past episodes of our program by going to YouTube and punching in Personally Speaking with Monsignor Jim Lasanti. And don't forget to click like and subscribe. You can also get us at personallyspeakingpodcast.buzzsprout.com or www.closeencountertv.com or www.ollmp.org. Personally Speaking is also on Facebook at Personally Speaking with Monsignor Jim Lasanti. We're also now on Instagram at Personally Speaking Podcast. Please share and let others know about Personally Speaking. Personally Speaking is a great show. I'm privileged to serve as host and executive producer. Our producer is Lisa Jandovitz. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll be with you again next time on Personally Speaking.